You've joined more than 60 international regulators in issuing this statement. Why did you feel it was important for the Isle of Man to be part of that collective warning?
So I think as a crown dependency, the Isle of Man is small but internationally connected. Our businesses, public services, and residents all use AI tools that are developed and trained globally. For me, by signing the statement, what we're saying is that the Isle of Man expects the same high standards here in our very small island, and that organisations must think about privacy from the start, not as an afterthought. It's basically, for me, it's saying that our people matter too.
And when we talk about AI-generated deepfakes, so what are you seeing that most concerns you right now?
I think for me, everybody's talking about generative AI and many people are already using it, though they might not necessarily be aware of it. It's the type of artificial intelligence that can be used to generate content like text, audio, images, video, and much more. And for me, what's been really concerning in recent months is the proliferation of harmful deepfakes. So that's non-consensual imagery of women, particularly, and also children. There's some really interesting research from 2024 that Ofcom, the UK's broadcasting regulator, conducted that said that 43% of adults and 50% of children between 8 and 15 reported seeing a deepfake online within a 6-month period. Yet fewer than 1 in 10 adults at the time felt confident that they could spot one. And of those that have actually seen, sexualized deepfakes, which are growing, and we've seen very high profile cases recently, 17% of those people feel that that content depicted somebody under 18. So for me as a regulator, that's really, really concerning. I think that's really what keeps me awake at night.
And is that something you're already seeing happening on the island, or is this almost like preemptive?
It's something that we're seeing happening on the island. So the harm is there. I think as a very small jurisdiction, we can sometimes think that what happens globally doesn't really affect us. But I'm aware of cases happening on the island and, the catastrophic impact that that is having on people here.
And you mentioned some of the statistics from that Ofcom research. Well, what do you think makes AI-generated imagery particularly difficult to regulate compared with more traditional forms of online abuse?
I don't think AI is particularly difficult to regulate. I think when we consider what my role is here as the Information Commissioner, I regulate data protection. And when we think about AI and generative AI in particular, those tools have to trawl through huge amounts of data to be trained. The product on everybody's lips at the moment, obviously, is ChatGPT and Grok, but there are many, many others. And, training that AI tool or training that AI service is usually achieved by sort of scraping the web and other sources for data. This can include personal data from social media accounts or elsewhere, taken without the data subject's knowledge and consent. So for me, the applied GDPR, which is the data protection law on the island, already provides a framework for regulating the use of or the processing of personal data within these AI systems.
And you said that organizations designing and deploying these systems carry the primary responsibility. In practical terms, what do you think they should be doing differently right now?
So if we think about the statement that I signed, I was one of 61 data protection authorities around the world, signing up to this statement that was published on Monday this week, which is a really, really strong international statement expressing our concern with non-consensual intimate imagery in particular, so those images that are known as deepfakes. What we're asking and what we're calling on organisations designing and deploying these services to really build strong safeguards to prevent the misuse of personal data and the creation of these types of harmful or intimate content, to also be really transparent about how these AI systems work, so their limits, the safeguards, and the consequences of misuse, and offer very quick, rapid, and accessible routes for people to request the removal of this content. And furthermore, to implement, special protections for children and provide really clear guidance for families and educators.
Maybe just a bit wider than the Isle of Man, but do you think that data protection laws, perhaps in a more broad sense, are strong enough to deal with how rapidly evolving artificial intelligence systems are?
I think it's a really good question. I think for me as the data protection regulator, I look to the law as sort of, through the lens through which everything I do here in my office. The data protection law that we have on the island is principles based and it's technology neutral. So the principles of fairness, transparency, lawfulness, data minimization, these are all principles that apply at the moment, or that apply to data protect. That apply to AI systems as well. So those AI systems are currently, you know, they are regulated by data protection, or I feel that they're strong enough. For me, it's about enforcement. And it's about holding those companies to account. And I'm watching the UK very recently, the UK Information Commissioner's Office and the Irish Data Protection Authority have both launched investigations into Grok, so XAI. I'm watching those with interest.
And if a platform fails to adequately put safeguards in place, I mean, do you have specific powers to intervene, or is it a collective-based system?
It's a really good question. So the law here gives me enforcement powers. So I've got an enforcement toolkit, essentially. And my powers are very similar to the powers sort of within the European General Data Protection Regulation, so the GDPR. So I've got powers, I've got enforcement powers. I can order an organisation to stop processing. I could also issue a monetary penalty. But I think what's really important to remember within the Isle of Man context, we're a very, very small office. So we have to work collectively with other organisations globally to tackle what is now a global problem.
If we look at some of the effects of AI-generated imagery, if someone were to discover an AI-generated image of them is circulating, what do you think their first step should be?
My advice to them would be to firstly contact that company or that firm and ask, exercise their data protection rights and ask for that image to be removed. And I would also be asking questions about, you know, what lawful basis was used to actually process that information. There is always an option for people to complain to my office as well.
And there's often a sense that once something is online, it can never truly be removed. I mean, is that a fair representation?
It can be a fair representation, which is why, you know, in our joint advisory, we've set out steps that people can take, you know. So I think it's really important to remember that information shared with AI tools may be difficult to fully remove. You know, once it's uploaded into a ChatGPT or a Claude or a Gemini, you know, that information may be stored, copied, or reused in ways that are hard to control. So even if content may be deleted later, it might not be possible to guarantee that all copies have been removed. So, you know, I'm encouraging people to think really carefully about the type of very personal information that they're sharing with these platforms.
And one of the more disturbing things is to do with children. You've heard parents and carers to have open conversations with their kids. So what do you think those conversations should look like?
It's a really, really important question. I think the main thing for me is parents should be advising their children not to create or share AI-generated content that could harm somebody. So, you know, in the Isle of Man context, that would be, or in the global context, that would be creating or circulating misleading, intimate or damaging, you know, AI-generated content about a real person. It could be unlawful and it can have serious consequences. Creating and sharing indecent images of a child is a criminal offence in the Isle of Man, regardless of whether AI is actually used. And I also think, you know, the point that any information shared with AI tools and services may be really difficult to fully remove as well. In terms of how parents can be helping their children here, I think, you know, for me, there's something really important here around being really sceptical of outputs. So just because something is written fluently or really confidently, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily accurate. I think it's also really important for parents to be checking privacy settings for themselves, but also for their children. So checking privacy settings and terms. Many AI tools use inputs, so things that you kind of type or enter into the system or the tool to train future models unless you opt out. And I also think it's important to remember that AI can be really convincing, but it's not a person, so it doesn't understand, you know, context, emotion or consequences the way that humans do. And I'd remember, you know, I'd really encourage people to think, if you're not going to post it publicly on a public notice board, think twice about typing it into an AI tool.
Do you think schools should be doing more to educate young people about AI literacy, digital rights?
I think we've all got a really important role to play. When I think about my role as the regulator here, I'm not an educator. My role is regulator. Of course, there's an educational aspect to the important role that my office plays. But when we think about the role that the regulator should be playing, we're going to be announcing our three priority areas later next month in March, at the end of March. One of those areas is going to be focused on children and keeping children safe online. We're currently firming up what that looks like, but I think that my office has an important role to play in advising children and also advising parents on how they can best understand and get the best out of social media.
Well, would you agree there's a tension between innovation and protection? Because how do we ensure that we don't stifle technological development, but we still protect fundamental rights?
I think that this is a bit of a myth that data protection is a blocker to innovation. I think for me, I always use the example of motor racing and kind of, you know, like the Grand Prix, and I'm not a fan of that. But if we think about the brakes, that system, the complicated brake systems that are designed into these cars that go very, very fast, kind of, you know, in Monaco and places like that, these brake systems are designed to actually help cars go faster. So I think when you bake in safeguards like the principles within the data protection legislation, like fairness, like lawfulness, like transparency, you engender trust that way. And with trust comes use of your products and services. So I think, you know, acquiescence doesn't necessarily equal trust within this context. I think that this is the law, but it's also the right thing to do.
Obviously, you've spoken about parents speaking with their children. That would depend on the sort of relationship that they have with their child. Do you think parents necessarily understand or appreciate how personal data might be reused or repurposed by AI systems?
I don't necessarily think they do, no. I think part of that is the technologies are moving so quickly, and there's a really important role for here as regulator to try and keep up with those technologies that we regulate. We've got a role to play here in educating people better, and that's something that I'm really keen for my office to be doing more of. And that's one of the reasons that I'm engaging internationally with my international counterparts to kind of keep abreast of some of these rapidly evolving, you know, technologies that have huge benefits to society, but also, as we can see in recent cases around, you know, harmful deepfakes that have real societal harms as well. So it's important for my office to be, on the one hand, making sure that we're championing and driving and you know, providing certainty about what responsible sort of data-driven innovation looks like, but on the other hand, making people aware of what the risks to some of these technologies are as well.
The international regulators are all saying that AI is a growing global threat. What do you expect the landscape to look like in the next 2 or 3 years? I know that's a tricky question.
That's a really difficult question. I don't know. So last week I was in India at the Global AI Summit. And again, what I'm seeing there is the sense that AI is here, like it's here to stay, and that it's already embedded in so much of the way that we live now as people. And I see that continuing to evolve. And I see that there's a real ambition there to get the best out of AI sort of tools and services to develop. You know, it's a central pillar now to many national economies as well. And we see in the Isle of Man the development of a national AI office. So we can see, on the one hand, the real benefits to using AI and similar technologies. So I see that continuing to, I see that continuing to expand over the next few years.
And if you could send one clear message to all technology companies right now, what would that be?
I think for me, it would be making sure that these companies are keeping people at the heart of everything they're doing, and remember that trust takes years to build, seconds to break, and potentially forever to repair.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.